Hey guys, Tom and Scott here from Bad Cuz Dad. Today we're joined by a buddy of ours, Brock. We've been wanting to talk about the new Guild Wars 2 expansion for a while. Brock is a longtime vet. He's been around, played every aspect of the game, really knowledgeable. There's a funny story about how we got into it that I'll share in a second. But Brock, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do in gaming. Go for it.
I mostly play Guild Wars 2 for online games. I got into SOTOR for a little bit. I play a lot of solo games, play a lot of just like strategy games with friends, other things too, just like for nerd credit into D&D, just all kinds of stuff like that is how I spend most of my free time.
Brock, we have to talk about D&D. Tom gave me a little insight into this D&D master stuff, and okay. Yeah, we need a little bit on that.
Okay.
So you're running a few. Like, you're the GM for a game, right? Or a couple games?
Yeah. Well, I'm like one campaign with some coworkers, and friends that I got into the game probably like 2 years ago, 3 years ago. And then I stepped in and was like, hey, I want to run something. And so we're in a campaign that's going to last for a long time. And then every so often when it's been a while since we played, then I'll do like a little one-off mission, one-shot thing or someone else in the group will say like, hey, I want to run something, and they'll do a one shot here or there. But yeah, it's a fun way to just like have social gaming, like in person, nerding out 4 or 5 hours.
And it's the original role-playing game. It's the original RPG. This is like what started the games we love today.
So you'll have like a group of guys like come, y'all go to each other's houses, right? So it's like super cool because you get that socialization and you're like playing a game also.
Set up the screen, roll the dice, have some snacks, have some drinks, play till like, I mean, we'll usually start like 8 o'clock at night and play till, I don't know, 1 o'clock in the morning. And then depending on, If we got to a good stopping point or not, we'll play again the next weekend, or we'll take a month off and then play again at that point.
So me and Scott haven't played, but there's like obviously D&D's come a long way, right? So there's like technology involved now. Like, do you have like a digital game board where you're moving through and you can set up set pieces, right, through some of that?
Yeah, I started playing I'm not really a poser, but like I am new to the whole D&D scene. Like I said, started playing 3 years ago or so. And right after we were like just a little ways into our original first campaign, COVID hit. And so we just moved all online, and they're virtual tabletops, and we could play all online over Discord and stuff. And
gotta do this.
And then once it was kind of like, hey, numbers are down, and we can kind of all like, I know you, I trust you. Yeah, we're all going to be like smart about how we're acting in public, then we'd get together in person again and old school role playing games, and it's very fun because you can literally do anything you want, no limitations.
Gotcha.
That's awesome.
That's super cool. And Brock, so obviously the name of our podcast is Bad Cuz Dad. So you have a real job, you have kids, right? So you're in the same boat as us, try to find time to play when possible, you know, outside of your responsibilities, obviously. So what does that look like for you?
It's I've got two girls, and so usually I'll play games on the computer. I'll play Guild Wars, or I'll play whatever other computer games late at night, stay up way too late doing that kind of stuff. But also I'm kind of proud dad. My 7-year-old is really into video games too. Like, she watches me play, she likes to play along with me too, and so I'm like, yeah, you
what's like, what is she into, like what games does she like to play?
She likes to watch me play Breath of the Wild. Just whatever I'm playing, she'll request me to play Breath of the Wild, but then she'll also just play, like, we'll play Pokemon together. I'll give her hints, I'll give her advice and that, and then she plays that on her own. Because it's also like, I mean, I think it's really good learning tool, because like, hey, here's a game that you can play, but you got to read to be able to do it. And so like kind of helps with her reading confidence too. Like, I'm obviously, she still reads books and stuff, but still, like, this is actually valuable for her.
And I share that sentiment with you too, Brock. My oldest daughter, actually all of them for the most part, they've been watching me play some games that, like, Little Nightmares. I don't know if you've seen that before. I play this game called Hello Neighbor, and it's like it's still sort of younger style games, but it's fun playing with them to where they can offer ideas, and we're watching the story together, and it's fun seeing them kind of get into the same thing that I remember getting into as a kid. Still love, obviously. So I completely share that. It's a fun bonding experience for sure.
Yeah, we're on the brink of, I think my boys are just ready. We're going to set up. So they each have their own Xbox, right? They have I have four boys, so they're all set up. They have their own gaming room with four stations, four Xbox One set up. And so we're going to have a dad-son Halo night soon. So since it's crossplay, I can be on the PC and they can all be on the Xbox, and we're just going to go run some big team battle or something. I'm really looking forward to that once we get it set up. But
Tom's going to leave us all for his kids soon.
Dude, once they get old enough,
need gamer friends.
And they're going to be better than all of us. So I'm just going to let them carry me through content.
You're
and through grooming games.
Your own esports team right now.
Dude, I have no idea. Dude, it's going to be so much money in esports soon. But anyway, so Scott, just before we get rolling, I know we're going to talk a lot about Guild Wars. Have you been playing anything lately, or how's life been?
Life's been fine, man. Just busy. Yeah. It's busy as usual.
I know you're on Lost Ark last time we talked.
Yeah, I haven't been gaming as much as I'd like to. Just been going to bed early, quite honestly. But yeah, I play a little Lost Ark. I've been eyeing Destiny 2. Mm. And then you guys showed me that new class just a little bit ago, and I was like, it's pretty rad.
Well, I've been trying to get you to play Guild Wars for years. Maybe after tonight, after you hear me and Brock talk about it, you'll give it a go, but we'll see.
Brock better make a case.
Yeah, we'll both try. But just so, funny story about me and Brock. So I was playing Guild Wars 2 since release, so 2012, I think if you've listened to us before, you know that I started with Star Wars The Old Republic in 2011, so it wasn't like I'd been playing MMOs long. But the hype for Guild Wars 2 was like insane back then. This is when you still got hype for games, but ArenaNet just knew how to get the hype train going. And it was so different from WoW and Star Wars, which I'd played at that point. And I was really into the game. I don't remember how long after launch, but I don't think, Brock, you had ever played an MMO before. Had
I
you?
I don't think so.
Okay. No. And the whole thing about Guild Wars, I was like, Brock, you just have to, because back in the day, Guild Wars was buy to play. Right now, it's, you can play for free right now, the whole base game. But back then, it was buy to play. So, and of course, back then, everything was subscription, right? If you want to play WoW or Star Wars, you had to sub back then. So I was like, Brock, you just have to buy the game once and you could play forever. It's an MMO. You don't have to sub. You don't have to spend any more money. And I don't remember how long it did, but I finally talked Brock into getting the game. And we played for a little while. I don't remember how long, maybe like 6 months or something. I don't know. It was a few months.
I think it was less than a year.
Yeah, it was probably less than a year. And then I think I went back to Star Wars, The Old Republic or something.
No,
I think.
No way.
And I game hopped basically, and I didn't play for years. And so I was like teaching Brock all this stuff. And then of course, when I came back, Brock had become the master. And now I'm asking him how to do things and all this stuff. So it was totally I got Brock into it. I abandoned him. And then he just kept playing, just dove super deep into the game. And then obviously I come back now a lot though. And so we'll play whenever, Guild Wars has some cool new content or stuff like that. But yeah. Do you remember that, Brock? I don't remember.
Yeah. It was honestly, occurred. if you hadn't stuck around, even when by the time you left, I was already hooked. So fine that you left, it was super helpful early on. Cause it was my first MMO. Had never done I'd played online games before, strategy games and stuff, classic Command and Conquer, things like that. And And like, and so this was totally different and new. And so to have someone to kind of like show me the ropes, all right, I know what I'm doing. All right, every day I have a goal I'm going towards. I'm going to complete this. I'm going to explore this area and stuff like that. It was once I was in and kind of with the mentality of this is an adventure game that I can play online and then start to like plug into, oh, here's a guild, here's a group that I can like kind of play with and stuff. Even though you'd left, it was still like, all right, I still have tons and stuff to do and lots of other people to play with. So it kind of was just the right amount to get me in and playing consistently.
Gotcha. And we'll get into the beauty of why leaving Guild Wars 2 is actually okay and not a big deal compared to some MMOs. But I guess the new expansion just dropped, Brock. So how much have you played of it? What are your like initial spoiler-free impressions so far of End of Dragons?
Like you said, I started soon after launch, like not exactly at launch, and have played all content since then with very few breaks. And I think that this expansion, the End of Dragons expansion, is like hands down the best content they've released. Because they also do like living world updates, like occasional story updates and stuff like between expansions too. But this expansion, this full package so far is like just meeting all my expectations. It's checking all the boxes. There's only some minor things that I like, oh, I don't like this, but it's like a minor inconvenience thing, or it's just a small gripe in this very nicely put together package. Spoiler free, I guess in terms of story in the new expansion, I've probably played about 3/4 of it. I'm nearing the end. I've been pacing myself so I don't just like rush to the end and overlook stuff and like miss out on all the good contents that's there, because it is very engaging if you take your time and let the game just kind of breathe. So I'm, you know, it's been out for 2 weeks and I'm almost done with it, but I don't want to cross that threshold and totally finish it, even though I know I'm just going to go back and replay it on alt characters and stuff again. It's so good playing it through and experiencing it for the first time.
Yeah, I am in the same boat. I don't know if you'd call it Act 2. I just entered Echovald Forest, the Echovald Wilds. And so I've done some stuff in there. So I've been through 2 zones. This is the 3rd zone I just entered. And the story has been incredible. Like really good twists, some really good arcs with characters that are, I mean, just good touches. And another thing, which Scott, I don't know if you'll appreciate this or not, just because I know you're a longtime WoW player, all of the story is voice acted. And not only is it voice acted, it's not, I mean, they have cutscenes, but it's not cutscene acted. Like if you walk up to someone in the story, you're just in the world walking with those characters and they're talking. So it doesn't cut from gameplay. The dialogue is while you're playing the game. And so you almost take in the story passively, even if you're not super into the story or reading, which you don't have to read because it's all voice acted. But I mean, I just remember like back when I played WoW, I was like, man, there's so much reading. And then Star Wars was really nice because it was voice acted, but it's all kind of cutscenes. And this is different. It's voice while you're playing. So it's just really unique. And I feel like the pacing of the story is like spot on. Like you don't move too fast. They stretch out the moments where, moments where it's serious and where it's lighthearted. And so I think they just hit the right beats with the story. And I'm very intrigued to see where it goes. I'm really drawn to it. And I feel like what they did with the masteries of expanding, because it's nothing crazy. They did like fishing and boats and this jade bot, which is going to be really cool. The siege turtle mount, which is a 2-person mount, Scott, where one person can ride and like shoot cannons. And you can use it in World v. World.
They look awesome in that game, honestly. I've seen a few clips. I know you've streamed a couple times.
They're the best mounts for sure.
They feel like they're part of the game and not just this weird, awkward model that has just like such a rigid movement.
Well, my
feels like this organic mount. It's cool.
Well, another point to that, Brock, and I don't know if you'll echo this. I feel like the new zones, the way Guild Wars does the mounts, the new zones are designed with the mounts in mind and all the movements they have. Okay. So it just fits really well. It's not like WoW where you just, oh, you have a mount that goes one speed or you can fly. To get to certain places, you need to use a certain mount, and it's all designed to work together, which I don't know, I think is really cool.
No, that's cool. Yeah. I remember you showed me the, was it like a shark mount or something?
There is a water mount.
Water one?
Yeah, you can go underwater. You can unlock underwater. You can glide above water. Totally.
Yeah, it was cool. And you get abilities for that mount too.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And the cool thing about the mounts is, which is like past expansion content, is they all have their unique purposes for exploration and for like achieving goals. So like, oh, you want to go over the water, use the one that hovers over the water and can dive down below the water. Oh, you want to fly through the air? There's two different mounts that have like different styles of flying through the air. One of them is more like hovering helicopter kind of movement, and the other is, oh, you're up high, you can dive bomb and just zoom across the map. But you can't really climb. You just like glide super fast horizontally. And every mount has their own unique role, and they're all distinct from each other. So it's just like, every single time I'm in a map, I'm finding, oh, I want to change to this, I want to change to this, I want to change to this, just to go and explore and see.
It's just really well thought out. Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, that's cool, Brock. I'm glad. I'm just, if I had to give it like an initial number, it's like, it's up there. It's like 8 or 9 out of 10 for me as far as like expand, especially coming off the, I know you haven't played it, Brock, but the Star Wars expansion was just like, I don't even understand how it was called an expansion. So coming off of that, I'm like so satisfied with what ArenaNet's done, you know, with this expansion. It just, it feels like a real expansion. You know what I mean? I'm really looking forward to where it's going to go. But kind of why I wanted to do the podcast on Guild Wars today is I feel like Guild Wars 2, in a sense, was way ahead of its time. I've kind of almost deemed it as the anti-MMO MMO, right? It came on the scene and it chose to do everything different from what the other MMOs were doing at the time. Everything's going to be account bound. I know people are catching up to it now, but hey, everything in your inventory, all your materials, you can just push a button and they go straight into your crafting bank. You go to the crafting table, you just get those there. You don't have to pull anything out of the bank to craft. Oh, you get to level 80, you're never going to have to raise your level cap again. You're there forever. Yo, you get your best in slot gear. Guess what? We're never going to make you grind another piece of gear ever. Unless you want to change your build, obviously, you can get a different, you know, stats on a different set of gear. But a lot of these things were just, I don't think players were quite ready to make that change yet. And maybe because, to be fair, like all of us, right? This was 10 years ago. I didn't have any kids yet. And so we were still MMO players that had time to play MMOs. Now we would look back on like classic WoW and you're like, I have to run where? I have to group up with all these people and get to the dungeon.
It's anxiety inducing.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me get anxious.
100%. And so when it came out, I didn't really appreciate what Guild Wars was trying to do. But now that I'm a dad of four and I have limited time to play, I've taken years and breaks off. And then when I come back, my guy is just as powerful as he's ever been. And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I can start doing ranked PvP literally the very first day back and not have to grind gear and start climbing the leaderboards. You know what I mean? Which is like unheard of. Like the last WoW expansion, you know, I tried to jump in with our buddy Spot and like grind arena, but I just couldn't keep up with the gear grind. I was like, this is exhausting. You know what I mean? I don't have the hours in the day to put towards it, kind of a thing. But I know,
and it's not saying that like WoW's wrong for doing that. It's just,
correct.
That's a flavor of that MMO. Mm-hmm. Guild Wars just offers a different flavor.
And Guild Wars was the first flavor of its kind of. And so that's why I think now, even 10 years later, it's starting to, I feel like it's gaining steam, Brock. What do you feel like seeing, playing the game every day and seeing how many people are in the world and stuff like that?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, building on what you said, I feel like a lot of those, like, quality of life, like respecting players' times, decisions that they made early on, they've continued to make them. And still with the focus of like, we want to respect your time. We want you to do what you want, play what you want, play how you want, and not ever gate things out. So like some of the more recent changes that these weren't in there at launch is like legendary gear, the top tier gear, is now just like fully stat selectable. So even with the new expansion, you know, there's like a horizontal progression. You don't have to change your gear. If you want to run like attack heavy gear, instead of something that's more defense focused, well, hey, with the new expansion, they released new stat combinations. If you have legendary gear, if you at any point in your playing career got to that level of gear, you can just change stats to whatever the new stat is that's just been released. And not only do you have to like even put in a tiny bit of grind for like whatever the new stat combo is, you just get it. And so like that little things like that they've done over the years that they continue to stress, hey, we want to respect your time. We want to let you play how you want to play. And it's just like, here's the world that we built. We want you to enjoy it.
So let's explain to Scott real quick. So this is my secret master plan of this podcast, is to convince Scott to play Guild Wars 2, in case you guys haven't figured that out yet, which is why I brought Brock the expert. So explain to Scott what legendary gear is exactly, because we kind of explained to him earlier that Ascended is the highest level. So when we say legendary, what does that actually mean?
So legendary is it's the same stat combinations. It's the same like numbers as ascended gear. Ascended and legendary mathematically equivalent to each other. It's just with legendary, you usually have to go through more of a, you can do like collection achievements to get them, or you can like play world versus world, which is the big server versus server PvP, or you can even get some in other means, like I think even structured PvP. I don't know, I'm not a big structured PvP person. You can get legendary gear for all of your gear slots, but that the ascended and legendary, those are like the top tier of what you're going to get at max level. And it's just like an extra bonus thing that the legendary has, like, you know, cool particle effects, there's like footfall effects, there's fancy skins and all that kind of stuff, but it's also fully stat selectable to any stat that's in the game.
Yeah, think of WoW. If you're playing a spec and you want to switch to another spec that use different stats, legendary, you can just go click a button and choose what stat allocation you want on your weapons. And you can also get legendary armor. And it's just like really fancy cosmetic stuff that has the same power as the other stats. It just looks cooler and you can select your stats. So run any build you want at any time, which is kind of cool.
So that's kind of my question that comes from it then. Usually MMOs thrive on having this constant carrot on the stick. So if in traditional MMOs, gear has been that carrot on the stick. So if gear is so easily attainable, if there's just, you know, normalization in certain aspects of the game, then what exactly is that carrot on the stick? Why should we log in to play?
And that's the reason why I left in the first place a lot, because I was having and this has always been kind of a criticism of Guild Wars, but I think it's just because players didn't understand it, or it was so new of not chasing the gear. Is the thing is, you just figure out what you want to do. And kind of what Brock mentioned, the legendary armor is a really big carrot on a stick, because it's really hard to get the armor. There's a lot of crafting involved, gathering, or the first gen legendaries you can buy with gold. So if you just want to farm gold and do whatever you want to do to farm it in order to buy, you can do that. So legendaries are a really huge carrot on a stick. Cosmetics, some people call it fashion wars too, right? It's the cosmetics are really crazy. And most of the cosmetics,
some good transmog.
Yes. And a lot of them are in the cash shop. But here's the unique thing about Guild Wars is the currency that you have to buy with real money in the cash shop, you can also exchange gold for that currency. So if there's something you want in the cash shop and you don't want to spend real money, you can just farm the gold, convert that to gems, which is the cash shop currency, and buy it with your gold essentially. So nothing in the cash shop can't be bought by playing the game, kind of. But those are a couple carrots on a stick. Brock, what are some things that have motivated you over the years, for example, to keep playing?
So I, like I said earlier, I really like adventure games. I really like exploration. I really like having like my checklist, my here's my goals I want to achieve. And with all the new content that comes out, I mean, yes, I know that I have limited playtime, and people who are going to know life the game, they're going to get everything, not just complete the story, but they're going to get everything and they're going to put it away for months until the next thing comes out. But for any normal player, anyone who's not going to be playing like 4 or 5 hours a day or more, if you're just playing an hour here, hour there, there's always things to do. There's always like, I see, oh, here's a good collection. I want to get this achievement. I want to get this title. I want to get this skin. I want to get this weapon set. All of these like in-game carrots that aren't necessarily like, hey, you're going to get the reward of being more powerful. Sometimes it's like, hey, I've completed this weapon set, and I get a little like just a little pat on the back for that. I get a little bonus extra thing to redeem for more weapon sets. And it just kind of like feeds that collector mentality of look at all this stuff that you can do, especially now coming in, you know, almost 10 years after the game launched. Any new player coming in has like the base game, which is probably you can get it done in maybe 20 hours of gameplay, you know, oh, I'm just going to solo play this or whatever. And then 3 expansions, which have seasons of content between them too. So just in terms of like what there is to do in game, if a new player comes in and they're like, yeah, I like this story, I like where this is going, I like the world, then that's enough to just like continue going, because there's always more things to do.
Probably a month's worth of story at this point, if you want to do all the story. I know, Brock, you've collected tons of, there's always cosmetic back pieces that come out with every zone that are big collections. I know, Brock, you're an achievement guy. I don't know, I think you have over 30,000 achievement points, am I right?
Yeah, I just hit 35K, which is not like, oh, look at me, haha, 35K, but it's kind of a lot, and the only way to get that high.
I would say you're like in the top 3%. Like you're way up there. I, for example, I've been playing for 10 years and I don't even have 10,000 yet. So you have 35,000 achievement points, which is crazy. But the other thing too, Scott, is they have, if you're a PvPer, like you can go PvP normalized and just go for it. If you like to raid, if you like dungeons, they have all of that stuff and you can just go do it. You get the currency for it and there's cool rewards that come with it. So the other big thing that adds to it is when they dropped their first expansion, they added these things called masteries. And what masteries are basically is a horizontal progression track. For example, in the first expansion, well, no, let's do the in Path of Fire, which was the ones where the mounts were introduced. So every mount has its own mastery line. As you play the game, your XP goes to whatever mastery you have selected. So for example, you're talking about the water mount, you will unlock its attack ability. You'll unlock if it can go underwater. So you're progressing horizontally a track for every single mount in the game, and you choose which mastery you want to use. Brock, what are some of like the base masteries or other ones that are really cool to go for?
So yeah, some of they tried out the mastery system with when they first introduced Heart of Thorns, the first expansion, and some of those were fairly limited. Like, oh, I can teleport between this spot and this spot on this map, but then they never used those again in any other maps. And so they were kind of testing the waters, and none of those really had any like major effect on the game, except for gliding. Basically, now once you do that mastery path just a little bit, you can jump off of any place in the main game, in expansions, and you know, aside from small areas where they have like they've specifically disabled gliding, or if you're in a story instance, which is very limited, you can glide anywhere. You can jump off this cliff and you can go across the canyon to the other side, and so that's been a big game changing one.
And Thomas, your mastery line also, as you progress the XP, and Scott, it makes you where you can glide faster, you have more stamina when you glide longer, so it just adds different, you can updrafts that are in the world that can take you higher, but you have to unlock the mastery. So I don't know. That's kind of like the horizontal progression of the game. It's super chill. There's lots of hardcore grinds, but none of them are mandatory. You only grind for something if you want to, which is the difference, I feel like, in the other games with the gear treadmill, because you don't have a choice, right? You have to do that grind. I don't know, but does that even sound appealing to you now, or do you really need that carrot that's mandatory to make you want to play?
I don't think I do. I think, you know, 5 years ago, yeah, maybe. But now, no, that kind of stuff causes me anxiety. And I don't want to feel stressed when I'm playing a game, like I have to catch up. And it sounds like there's a lot to do, and you can kind of just choose what you want to do. And the one thing that stands out to me is, in a game like WoW, you didn't really explore. The worlds look cool. Like, you could visually take them in and say, yeah, this is sweet. It looks good. It's nice to be here. But Guild Wars sounds like the world is worth exploring and actually making use of all the different types of movements. And it sounds like the world is more immersive, essentially.
Yeah, there's like, immersive is the perfect word for it. And I thought of it when Tom was saying, like, the conversations that you have with NPCs as you're just like walking along and you overhear something. You're like, oh, that's interesting. Let me check that out. But it's voice acted and kind of enticing you. Hey, come over here and play. Why don't you investigate this? Or one of the other things that got me hooked early on in with the base game, and they've brought them back here with the most recent expansion, was just open world jumping puzzles. Something that like I'd never thought of. Yeah, that's just one of those things of like, oh, cool, I'm playing this adventure game, and here's a platformer. Okay, let's go do that.
You're right, though, about the maps. The maps are super dense with, like, things to do, right? They have points of interest you can explore. They have the vistas, which are give you, like, the Assassin's Creed vibe. You know, you get the vista, and it gives you, like, a panoramic view of your area that you're in. Yeah. I mean, you can't jump into a pile of hay at the bottom, but you can glide down, you know, which is cool.
That was it, man. That was the deciding factor right there.
Yeah.
No haystack, no play.
Yep. Waypoints. So the maps are, and the dynamic events, which is, I'll kind of transition into this too, which events play into this, but Guild Wars 2 encourages group play, even if you're not in a technical group. And when I first started playing, Brock, that was really appealing coming from a Star Wars and a WoW. I don't know if that got you hooked or maybe you didn't know any better back then, but there's everything is shared. So tagging is shared, right? If you walked up on a quest going on or an event and you hit the mob no matter if you're in the group or not, if there's 50 players around, you get credit just for helping do the event. You don't have to be in a group, and there's no, every mob is shared. Resources are individual, right? So unlike WoW, if you mine, you know, a node, the node just disappears for you. Like, if we were all in a group playing, everyone could mine the same node. It's just personal, you know, nodes that you mine or chop down trees or stuff like that, which is cool. But yeah, the events were so cool because I would just be going through a zone and the events pop up like these orange like things on the mini map, orange circles that tell you something's going on. And all of a sudden just players would just flock to it. And you just have all of a sudden in the open world, players coming out of the woodwork and you're all in the event scale. So the more people join, the harder the event gets. And you're all working together to do this, even though you're not in a group, right? And it's just a sense of achievement. And the events are so cool too, because most of the time the events are chains of events. So you'll do like an escort quest, right? And you'll get this guy safely to a place and then he delivers something. And then once he delivers it, another group will come in and try to steal it. So usually you want to hang out for a little bit after events to see if the next event chain, but also if you fail an event, it goes back and the chain stops and you have to almost kind of restart it. I don't know. Did you really like the events, Brock, when you first started playing the dynamic events?
Yeah, they were early on. They were nice to have something to like kind of guide me through the content and see other players come together and like, all right, I'm trying to read the bar there and see, all right, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, I'm just going to follow these people, do what they do. And then now, and that was one of the funny things when like you came back into the game, I'd be like, oh yeah, hey, let's go to this event. And then I could tell you, here's what you want to do. You want to take this over here. You want to get this, this monster has to eat you and you have to hit him. You have to shoot him from the inside and he's going to spit you out. And then he's vulnerable and then you can attack him. And it's like this way complicated event. Oh yeah. That's, I do that weekly. Like that's a fun one, you know? And like, it's, I never had anything to like compare it to, like you said, but now that's one of the things that keeps me in Guild Wars is if I do try another MMO, if I, oh, my coworkers, they want to play WoW. And so I'll download it again and play and get in there. And I'm just like, this feels clunky to me. Like, I don't know what to do. Cause there's just no inherent, it's just not obvious of like, do whatever you want. And the game kind of like accepts what you're doing as valuable.
Hmm. Yeah. You have to be very specific in theme park games, right? With what they want you to do. They want you to play the game how you want to play them. Whereas Guild Wars is you pick what you want to do and you get rewarded for whatever it is, whatever you think is fun, you can go do it and you get really nicely rewarded and you can progress in that manner. The next thing I wanted to touch on, which maybe you can speak to this some, Scott, is I feel like the quality of life things in Guild Wars are really amazing. So for example, however much gold you have, your gold is account bound, right? Your currency. When you log in on any character, you have your full amount of gold on whoever it is. Like there's no transferring gold, you know what I mean, to other things. Your bank is shared account wide. So every piece of armor is shareable. So if you have a medium class and you have armor that's best in slot and you want to move it to your other guy, everyone can share the same armor. You don't have to farm another set of armor, basically. I don't know. What are some other big quality of life things for you, Brock, that you feel like Guild Wars does really well?
One of them, you know, just going back to like the amount of content, you download the base game, you have the storyline up to level 80. Cool. That's a full game in and of itself, but it's free. Then one of the things that I think is a, maybe this isn't quality of life, but just like overall quality is you buy the new expansion, you get the previous two expansions included with it. It's like it's a retroactive everything up to that point. Mm. Specifically, let's see, quality of life stuff.
Well, let me ask Scott this. Scott, were you a big, like, were you big on alts back in the day with WoW? Did you play a lot of characters?
I didn't. And that was mainly because I think first and foremost, it was just out of the question. Like it would require so much time just to play one character and to progress well on that. So no, I didn't. And as time went on, I started to get really attached to that one character outlook because I felt like it was just this, it was the original representation of yourself in the game. And you put your time and effort into that and you became a part of that world community and people knew you as that character and you were loyal to a class. So it kind of, for me, it still holds that same type of rigid outlook. It's just kind of the way I look at it, because I think when other people are constantly playing other classes or switching between characters, like you don't have it doesn't allow for this establishment within the world. So for me, while I realize that's obviously convenient and very much a huge quality of life aspect, I don't think that really factors in for me. I think that's good for people who love alts, but for me, it kind of detracts from the specialness of that.
Well, this may sound weird, but I think the way you don't obviously don't have to view it this way, but I think a good way to view Guild Wars is to view not progressing your character, but progressing your account, because everything is shared across your account. Right, Brock, you can go, there's a website, Guild Wars to Efficiency, where you can go plug in your API and it tells you the value of your overall account, like all your assets you have in game, all your gold, all your armor.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And so, because alts are so easy to do, you know what I mean? So easy to move gear, so easy to jump into things. And for me, like in WoW, I actually did want to play alts. I'm not like a huge alt player, but after I play a game for a long time, sometimes switching characters or classes is a really is like content, right? Like, oh, it's almost like I get to view the game in a slightly different lens of what class I'm playing. It can be
novel and refreshing.
But those games, it's so hard to get the gear you need to even play the character at a competitive level because we're PvPers, me and you. And so to do PvP on a rogue instead of a hunter or whatever in WoW, I'm like, man, this is a whole nother grind that I'm like, wow, I just want to experience the combat a little bit and have some fun kind of a thing.
Oh, it's much more practical now. Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel like Guild Wars takes the quality of life to a whole nother level. Like I said earlier, I feel like games are seeing what they've done and they're trying to catch up. I know Star Wars has now a like deposit all materials button, something that doesn't feel like that big of a thing, but when you have limited inventory space and all that, it's a big deal. And so I feel like they're slowly catching up, but they got a long way to go to get there and beat Guild Wars. Is there any other quality of life stuff you could think of, Brock, or no?
I think probably the biggest quality of life feature of Guild Wars 2 that I appreciate, because I do have a lot of vaults. I still, with my main character, I just looked at my stats in game the other day. I've played about 50% of my time over the last 9 years on a thief. And
which is like a rogue, right? Like a rogue kind of in WoW or something.
Yeah. And the other 50% of my time across all the other character classes, just because I want to try it with this. I want to see what this character is like. Ooh, I don't like this. I like this one. This one's cool too. And so kind of getting that different play style. But one of the biggest quality of life things for me is the when they introduced shared inventory slots. So in your inventory bag at the top is just like this row of, like, I think you have by default, I forget how many you get by default, but then every so often, you know, with the in-game currency, with gems, you can buy some more, or, you know, when you buy you pre-order an expansion, maybe it comes with another inventory slot. And so I've got like 8 there now. So no matter what character I'm on, I can always teleport to my home instance, or I can, I have like the best gathering tools up there so that no matter what character I'm on, they can go out there and they can farm resources. And I don't have to go, I need to go back to a main city, go to my bank, re-equip, then take this character out. Before I log out, have to drop that stuff off in the bank. It's just up there all the time available for me so that, hey, I'm going to play the main story on this character, but then maybe I have another character just parked by a good farming node. And when I've got 5 minutes before I sign off at the end of the day, log in and then farm those materials and then sign out.
Yeah, so it's like a cool, that's a great, great shout out to that, Brock, because the shared inventory is so awesome. Because you're right, I'll have like the boss teleport in my shared inventory slot, so no matter what character I'm on, they have that in their bag, which is so cool. And I don't know if any other games do that kind of shared inventory in their bags for all characters. But yeah, that's a really good one. The other thing I wanted to kind of talk about is the PvE instance content. Obviously, Guild Wars 2 has the old dungeons. They don't really make new dungeons anymore. They're more exploratory. You had like your regular, your story dungeon path, like you did it a part of the story. And then they have like 3 explorable wings to every dungeon or explorable paths you could do, which were cool. They don't do those much anymore. I don't know if you know this or not, Scott, but Guild Wars actually invented Mythic Plus. Okay, they had fractals of the mist way back in the day, which are like 15-minute dungeons that go from level 0 to 100. And so they scale in difficulty as you go up. And as you get into higher levels, you have to actually kind of grind this thing called Agony Resistance that you slot into your gear. But it's basically Mythic Plus. They just had it for a long time. But they're bite-sized. You just jump in. The dungeons only last 15 minutes. Sometimes there's some jumping puzzle elements to it, but basically you get right to the boss fight. And this is what I kind of wanted to get to Guild Wars, or mention about the PvE. Everything is about getting to the fun, right? So one of the new pieces of content they have is called Strike Missions. It's 10-player instance content, and basically it's like a raid boss, but you just fight the boss. Just boss. You just go in and you fight the raid boss. You get awesome rewards, cool mechanics, you know. And this might be a little bit of a hot take, Brock. I don't know how you're going to feel about this. When Heart of Thorns, Guild Wars 2 introduced raids, and I think they haven't done a ton of raids. They have a handful of raids and with different raid wings to the raids. The raids are some of the best of any game. But here's the hot take. I feel like it was a mistake to put raids in. I feel like every time Guild Wars does something that other games do, it's a mistake. I feel like Guild Wars needs to go its own path and be the anti-MMO MMO. That's why I think the strike missions are awesome. And actually in the expansion, they're introducing 4 strike missions with hard modes because I think they've realized this. We don't want to be like the other MMOs, right? Although the raids are amazing, and I think players who like them should like them, I just feel like it was a mistake to try to do what other games were doing. Guild Wars should have always forged their own path with content. And so I'm really excited about the new strikes to be able to just jump in and do the boss fights whenever I want some of that instance PvE, big group style content. I don't know, Brock. I mean, is that a hot take or is that?
I mean, I kind of agree. But I also think there is a good reason to, you know, in the sense of, hey, offering players what they want. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, if you want to play raids, here is a 30-minute raid. Or, I mean, once you start min-maxing and just, like, it's been out now for years, you can get it done in maybe 10 minutes or something like that. Like, the enrage timers are not even an issue for your group anymore or whatever. Like, you're going to blast through those super fast. But when they were novel and new and there was a... I don't know if it was, you know, there was a vocal part of the player base that wanted raids. I could see Guild Wars saying, all right, here's raids. And they are really good. But when it's such a niche group of the mm-hmm. player base that will actually like experience them, because, you know, then other players see that and they're like, oh no, raiding, that's ultra hard content. And I'm not able to do that, or, you know, I want to avoid that because I've heard raiding is toxic or whatever. You have to list your gear. It's like
kill proof. Yeah, like all this stuff. Yeah.
And so like, I think, yes, it maybe was, it appealed to a certain player who wanted raids, mm-hmm. and that's good. But I think that they maybe did, they came back to the correct decision for the majority of the player base in making strike missions, because then it is, hey, we want you to play how you want to play, but we also want to respect your time. Here's the boss, go for it and get some cool rewards and enjoy. And here's the carrot. Here's the achievement. Here's the unique weapon skin that you can get from doing these things enough, you know? And so it's still there, but it was with their own spin on it. So I think raids are more appropriate. I'm sorry, strike missions are more appropriate mm-hmm. for the player base than raids. But I wouldn't necessarily go so far to say that raids were a misstep or a bad call, because there was definitely a part of the player base that wanted them.
Well, let me back up my point, even more though. When was the last raid put out?
Path of Fire. Soon after Path of Fire.
And that was in 2017?
Path of Fire was in, 2017. So the raid might have been... Mm-hmm.
That is my point. So this is kind of a side tangent, not just about raids, but when you're producing content in an MMO that's touted as the casuals MMO, kind of, for a reason, because it respects your time so much, producing content for 0.1% of the player base takes up a lot of resources for content that's never going to be seen by 99.9% of the player base. Here's mm-hmm. what I love about strike missions. Every strike mission boss is taken from the story. So as we've been playing the story, I've already in the story mode or in the story, I've fought one strike mission boss, right? And it's going to be a strike mission in the game. When you enter the strike, it's going to be harder, obviously, but now every player has seen the content, right? Unlike a raid, and WoW, they had to end up making LFR because players weren't seeing the content. I think it's cool that they can put their resources into making it a part of the story, but then it's also in-game PvE content. So they've done two birds with one stone. They've made it a part of the story. They've made it a part of the end game, and they've said they're creating. They call them CMs or challenge modes. So it's like nightmare mode, basically, for the strikes, for the really hardcore players. I get what you're saying about people wanting the raids. I just don't ever want Guild Wars to conform to what other MMOs are doing. I want them to stand firm on, we're doing it our own way and going our own way and innovating in the way that we see it, see, I don't know, what our vision is for the game from the beginning. So yeah, I agree. Anyway, we'll drop raids. I know, who cares? Nobody cares. We'll probably get flamed in the comments for talking bad about raids. But
I will say you were right though. Like I've done one raid in my, you know, in the whatever 8 years, seven years since Heart of Thorns came out. I did one raid and was like, I can't commit this kind of time to this. Like I can't even do this on a weekly basis, even though I was basically carried through the whole thing, because it was my first time doing it and I didn't know what was going on. Yeah. I have gone in and seen people's streams and their videos of playthroughs of the raids, because like there's some really cool story in there, and like how it kind of tied in with the living world, the content updates that were happening when those were active, was really, really fascinating to see. I felt like I was missing out in a sense because I wasn't raiding, but I just didn't have the time to. I couldn't commit to that.
Again, which is why Guild Wars is amazing. Hey, let's make a raid, but it's just the end boss. Like, how cool is that? It's a great idea. And anyway, I'm looking forward to doing all the strikes in the new expansion. I think they're going to be great. So the next thing I want to talk about is PvP. Obviously, me and Scott, we met playing PvP in Star Wars, right? That's what we did every single night for years, you know, was just log in and destroy noobs, you know what I mean? In our 8-man pre-made on Star Wars The Old Republic. So super fun. So as a PvPer, I don't know if I can look to any other MMO and say it's as accessible as Guild Wars 2 PvP is. So basically, at level 2, am I right about that, Brock?
Yeah.
At level 2, you can teleport to the PvP staging area, the PvP instance area. You have access to every single weapon, or you have these things that allow you to slot into your gear to give you whatever stat combinations you want that are at max level. You're basically boosted to max level. Everything is normalized. You can queue up and start PvPing at level 2 with no grinding ever. And you can sit there and PvP forever without doing anything. And here's the cool thing. I'll let you talk about this, Brock. Why don't you talk about the reward tracks and stuff you can do while you're in PvP?
Yeah. So, and it's not just exclusive to PvP, but you can also do it in World v. World. If PvE is not like your play style whatsoever, you can basically choose, hey, I want to earn rewards towards this, whether it's legendary gear or, you know, this cool exclusive weapon set or armor set, or I've heard that there's I don't really like playing this content in the open world, but it's got some good rewards. I want to get that currency, that map currency. I'm going to choose that reward track basically for any of the content that's been released. Yeah, for any of the content that's been released in the game, I think pretty much has a reward track associated with it. So you can just go through the list and say, hey, I want to earn rewards for this specific content. Again, it can be legendaries, it could be PvP exclusive, it could be something that is tied into part of the story in the open world, like PvE content stuff. But you just basically say, I want to be earning credit towards this while I play my preferred game mode. And you accumulate currency towards that, where you accumulate progress towards that. You get XP boosters towards that. And so you can complete a track pretty quickly in PvP, and then just repeat it over and over and over until you want to do something else.
Yeah. So basically, there are these PvE reward tracks in PvP. You just select the track, all the experience you get in PvP goes towards it. You can get the weapons from that map. You can get currency to buy things from that specific zone. The other cool thing is you get these things called Tomes of Knowledge from PvP. And one Tome of Knowledge basically boosts you one level. So you can level completely in PvP without ever stepping into the world. And as a PvPer in MMOs, that's all I ever wanted, was that I could actually max my guy out just by doing PvP, but it's never that simple, is it, Scott? Like, I don't know. I'm sure you can talk to that.
No, I think you're right. It brings to mind the South Park episode where after, like, grinding for hours, and they're like, well, what do we do now? And he's like, now we play. It's like, yes. And after all that, it's like, so I get what you're saying. You want to just get in and play, and where that keeps coming to mind for me is it's accessible for one, and then number two, it's practical. So it's definitely alluring in that way.
Yeah, just respects your time, you know. Go ahead, Brock.
You mentioned that, like, you can get into PvP as soon as you get to level 2. Well, I mean, when you create a new character, it doesn't matter what character, what race, what class you pick. The very first thing you do is you're just, like, on an intro mission where you literally have one skill on your skill bar, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And it takes you 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes. If you want to hit every single checkpoint along the way and talk to all the NPCs along the way, 15 minutes to complete that intro lesson mission where you have one skill on your skill bar. And when you complete that, you're level 2. So literally you play for 5 to 15 minutes, and then you can go and do whatever you want.
And here's basically what I did, and maybe this will be appealing to you, Scott. I basically created one of everything. I got him to level 2, and then I went into PvP because you're max level there. So you can test everything about every class and find what you like before you take it into the open world and start, you know, putting that time in to level it up. Because in some games, you're like, you get to level 30 and you're like, man, I am not really feeling this class, but I've put level 30 worth of work into finding that out, right? For Guild Wars, you can just go to the PvP area and figure out in one day what your favorite is. You know what I mean? And mess with everything. So
this trait line, these skills, that's what I want to focus on first. And by the time you hit level 80, the whole class is unlocked. It's not like a skill tree where you've chosen this path and you're not going to ever get access to these skills. Once you hit max level, the entire class is open to you. It's just along the leveling experience. If you want to, like, have the most fun doing that in PvE, PvP does help you with that, because you do get to just basically test it all out for free.
Well, I don't want this to go too much longer, so I'll kind of hit two small things before we kind of wrap up. The other thing is, I'm not a huge crafter in games. I think, Brock, you're probably really deep into crafting on Guild Wars, but
yes, I am.
Everything worth having in Guild Wars is craftable. Other MMOs have taken the other route. Crafting basically in WoW and Star Wars Old Republic means zero at this point, right? There's, like, nothing worth crafting, really. You know, gear is not, but the best in slot gear is crafted in Guild Wars. And it's an individual craft. It's not tradable. Once the Ascended gear, once you craft it, or Legendaries, you know, it's yours. And so, more than that, I don't know. Do you have any notes about crafting? Scott, do you even care about crafting in games usually, or not really?
Not if it's grindy.
Yeah.
If it's kind of just enjoyable.
I don't know. Brock, you're super into the crafting right now. I think I'm trying to get my max cooking is what I'm still on, but it's been fun. What about you?
I think I have all disciplines at max level across various characters.
Right.
Because, again, alts, and you can have 2 crafting disciplines per character. So
right.
I'm not gonna use my gems to have one character who can craft it all. No, I'll just switch characters and have my guardian craft the heavy armor I want. But I think whenever I'm in a new zone, first thing that I'll try and find from the vendors is what are the things that I can buy that boost my currency gain, like my map specific currency gain. And then the very next thing that I'm looking to buy from vendors is recipes. so I can craft the gear with the new weapon sets, with the new stat sets, whether it's armor or weapons. That's like the second thing that I go for in every new map is, oh, okay, here's this new recipe for armor. So I'm going to get that because I have the max level anyway. And getting to max level in any crafting discipline except for scribe, which is really just for like,
that's guild halls, for like
guild, guild hall decorations and stuff like that. That's more of like a, hey, a community probably gets together and gets one person in the community up to max level so they can do all the things for the guild. I take it back. I'm not max level in scribe, but that is an insane, insane threshold to try and get as a mostly solo player. But it's meant for like a checklist for a group of players to combine together and get, but everything else is just easily craftable in like, even at launch, you could get to max level in like maybe an hour.
Did you, I don't know if you know this, Brock, I think you do know this, but I actually max leveled at least one or two characters by just crafting. You get XP for everything. So there's actually guides that tell you, I had enough gold, so I just bought the mats I needed and then just crafted and had enough XP from crafting to get to max level.
Oh.
Like, it was super cool back in the day, which I'm not a crafter, but it is fun to craft in Guild Wars 2. The other thing was, Brock's been talking a lot about map currency, Scott. There's certain, you get a currency basically for every map that's tied to that map that can get you cool rewards or lead to achievements or things you can buy. So what it does is it keeps every single map in the game is relevant today, past 10 years. You go back to all the maps all the time to do things. And in Heart of Thorns, they released what are called map metas. They're like these huge map-wide event chains that lead and culminate to like sometimes a huge boss encounter. But it takes cooperation from everyone on the map to progress this meta event. And a lot of times the rewards are really awesome for those. I don't know, Brock, what are some of your favorite map metas since Heart of Thorns came out?
I think that the first map meta that, I mean, I'll still go back. If I look on the overlay timer that I've got and I see that map meta is about to happen, will be the... is it Tahrir?
Mm-hmm. The Golden City one?
Yeah, I'll go back to Tahrir and I'll do that Golden City of Tahrir map meta. Still, that meta event was my first experience of like, hey, you need to all coordinate what time you kill the boss guarding your section.
And there's four different groups, right, that have to kill the bosses in a certain time frame to trigger the meta. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, well, when the meta is going on, you're attacking the city from four sides, north, south, east, west, and when you're at the final boss for each direction, once that boss dies, then you have like, I think, 30 seconds, or no, it's 2 minutes. 2 minutes to kill all the rest of them. And if you don't, then they all get buffed back up by 33% health. And so there's an overall timer going for the event, and if you don't coordinate when you kill the boss, then you're never going to get it. And it was my first experience of that. Like, hey, we need like very strong map wide coordination. That was so fun that like, I'll still go back to that. It has a special place for me even 7 years later.
Yeah. That's cool. And Scott, what's my favorite pastime to do in Star Wars, The Old Republic?
Jump on a mailbox.
Sit on fleet and jump on the mailbox because there's no reason to ever go anywhere else in the game once you're at max level. Like, when's the last time you went to a starter zone from World of Warcraft? I mean, you know what I mean? It just...
Yeah, just to go flex, you know, elite status.
On maybe, noobs, yep. So Guild Wars, it
not
just...
Not for any good reason.
Right. So Guild Wars, and also there's dailies, like gathering dailies that'll take you to all over the world, just event dailies to do things in different parts of the world. So it's just the world is almost the game too, a part of the game. And it just, you want to explore with the mounts. You want to just go to every part of the world because it's all still relevant. It's just a cool feature. The last thing I wanted to bring up, really, because I know this will get Scott to play, is we kind of touched on it earlier, but cosmetics are king. Cosmetics are everything in Guild Wars 2, right, Brock?
You unlock a new die and you're like, yes, I got a new one. Like, why does that make me so happy? I don't know.
Yep. And Scott always jokes with me and WoW. My end game was just messing with my UI, like all my add-ons and stuff. Well, kind of in Guild Wars, the end game is just changing how your character looks, like finding cool transmogs, pieces of armor, or just getting, they have outfits that are total, but everything has die channels, right? So you can die every piece of armor and all your dyes are account bound. So you just go in and you just mess forever. You find weapons that like match your transmog and your outfit. And, you know, I don't know. It's amazing.
Mounts to match up to, because mm-hmm. you can dye your mounts. So
yes, like you can dye mounts. Incredible. It is. It's, I know Star Wars Old Republic now you can dye pieces, but it wasn't always like that. Guild Wars is just, they're just ahead of its time. It's just, if you want to spend the time to go for that crazy legendary armor, you can, or you can just find some really cool armor skins that you want to dye. You can dye your boats in the new expansion, right? You can dye your fishing boats. Like it's, I don't know. I just think that's cool. And I know Scott, that's a big deal to you usually in games.
Yeah. I mean, totally. That 99% of playing well is looking good. Have a crappy transmog, you're just not gonna play at top level, you know.
It is true. I think those are some of the things that make Guild Wars 2 just unique in a crowd, a sea of MMOs that are all this, you know, very similar. And I think it's taken
definitely a sleeper, you know, like it's been there. It's been, like you said, it's been out for 10 years,
and I feel like it's so gaining momentum. It's
been doing something right.
And there is one other big thing is. I know it's not here yet, but they have talked about a Steam launch. And I feel like if Guild Wars launches on Steam, that is going to be... I feel like the game is stylized enough where the graphics still look good. I don't know. I just feel like it's a great game. Like you said, Scott's a sleeper. And if it can... I feel like it's gaining momentum even now, which seems crazy to say after 10 years.
10 years after, yeah. Like yeah. Coming up on August is going to be... 10-year anniversary of the launch date.
Wow.
Things like our last video, things have gotten a little stagnant.
Mm-hmm.
Developers haven't been putting out good games, even just normal games, non-MMOs. So,
right.
You know, for something that has stood the test of time and is still desirable and highly accessible, it doesn't surprise me that it's gaining momentum.
Yep, that's the Steam launch. I think is one of those things. It's like, you know, I keep trying to get my friends to play it. I'm like, hey, like you should play this. Like it's really good. Like it doesn't take much time for you to get invested in, and respect your time and all this kind of stuff. And they're, of course, now they're I'm getting pressured to, oh, you should play Elden Ring. You should play Elden Ring. I'm like, come on, like I want you to play my game. But I think. If it was on Steam, that would be, that's like the thing that they're holding out for. Because once it's there, I can say like, look, it's here. It's on the platform that you use. Just go and download it. Give it a try. And then.
Because the base game is free, right? Yeah.
Yep.
So there won't be a barrier to entry to get into the game, which would be really cool. Scott, do you have any questions about Guild Wars or anything, or anything intrigued you?
You guys covered a lot.
There's a lot there.
Yeah. It's a big game.
A lot to take in. And I think the thing that keeps sticking out to me is just accessibility, practicality. It's just, if you have limited time to game and you still want that MMO experience, it seems to definitely fulfill all those wishes.
Well, guys, thanks for joining us. I know this is a long one today, but hey, I know... I'm passionate about Guild Wars, and I just wanted to bring it to the channel and talk about it. Thank you, Brock, for joining us and adding your level of expertise to everything. We've enjoyed it. Guys, if you liked it, hit the subscribe button. hit the bell to get notified when we come out with more stuff, and you'll probably see some more Bad 'Cause Dad gameplay on the channel from Guild Wars 2 in the near future. We appreciate it. Thanks, guys.